Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
The Vice President for Intercollegiate Athletics at Penn State, Sandy Barber. Sandy, welcome. It's always great to talk with you.
Good afternoon, Steve. Always wonderful to connect.
Well, let's start with this. Obviously, you are somebody, and I know this for a fact, that have great respect for your predecessors here at Penn State. Everybody wants to, when it comes time, to leave the situation better than when they took it. I can assure everybody, as somebody who's been here, you've done exactly that. What has your staff meant to you over this time to help you to get to a point of transition where it is better than when you took the job?
Well, Steve, I mean, they've been incredible. We all know nobody does anything alone. And as a matter of fact, the engine behind all of this has been what we refer to as our one team. And I've had the privilege to have inherited a great team. A lot of folks that have been dedicated for a long time to Penn State and doing what's right for Penn State and our students and our community. And then over the course of 8 years, we've had the opportunity to bring some new folks to State College who have become just as dedicated and passionate Penn Staters. And we've worked to stay up with the times, maybe modernize some things in ways that are appropriate for Penn State, make sure that we maintain all of the traditions that are important to our community, our alumni, teach them to each generation of students and student athletes that come in, and maintain what's special about Penn State, but at the same time continue to evolve, because we know that that the students we serve, those 17 to 22 year olds, they're different today than they were 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and certainly 30 and 40 years ago. And so that's where we need to keep pace. We need to evolve. Although we have a very dedicated and longtime fan base, there is some evolution there. So we need to keep up with what's important to them and what will keep them coming and supporting. That is really one of Penn State's most treasured points of difference. So it's on a lot of levels, but certainly the things that have always been important to Penn State: character development, the academic performance of our student athletes, and then of course, winning on the field, court, pool, track, mat, whatever it is. Those are things I think that we've had an opportunity to maintain.
Obviously, an individual national championship in pommel horse, a team national championship in wrestling, but also over your time, the graduation rate of the student athletes at Penn State is now at 92%. What does that number mean to you?
Yeah, that one's special, and I'll tell you why. So that 92 is the second year in a row that we've had an NCAA graduation success rate, what's referred to as the GSR, at 92. When we achieved it a year ago, that was an all-time record. We've matched that for this latest set of data. And, it would be one thing to say you set an all-time record at a place that, maybe had not been very good and you reached 80% or something. Penn State has always been good, historically. I mean, me growing up in Maryland, I knew that about Penn State. I knew that Penn State athletics took the academic piece very, very seriously and that they were always very good. So to have the opportunity to be at Penn State, to be leading the athletic department at a time when we set the all-time record at a place that has always been known to be really good, that's pretty special.
No question. Absolutely special. Facilities have obviously been important, and Panzer, of course, being built, Morgan, of course, everything has been done with facilities. What has, you know, the dedication that's been needed on the fundraising side to make that possible so that you can get you know, the facilities into the 2020s, 2030s, and beyond?
Yeah, that's Steve, something, you know, Penn State has always had good facilities. You know, I think over time, we fell behind a little bit. And as costs have continued to rise and frankly, the price of success, certainly in football and the basketballs, but also, you know, I mean, look at the kinds of resources we've put in to our two ice hockey programs as we brought those on as varsity sports. You know, we're very proud of the fact that we sponsor 31 sports. They're not many, certainly not many public institutions in this country that do that. And I think that is a very important and very point of pride, point of difference for us. But that comes at a cost.
Yes.
And certainly when we're competing against some other school that may only be sponsoring 20 programs, or you know, the NCAA minimum for Division I is 14. And we obviously are exceedingly above that. And that's, that is not an inexpensive proposition, and so some schools that have the opportunity to take their television revenues and put them towards debt service for facilities, we're putting those towards real programs,
right?
Towards supporting many of our non-revenue programs, and so certainly we're going to look from a we have to look from a philanthropy standpoint to our fans and to our base and to our donors to help support these facilities. And they have. You mentioned the Morgan Center. I mean, it was a great support there. That was the first capital project under my watch, and I'm really proud of that. But once again, that was an academic component before my time. But obviously, what Terry and Kim Pagula and many other donors did to get our ice hockey programs up off the ground from a varsity standpoint. By the time we get through with this phase, and then there's one more small phase with Lash, we will have put $100 million into Lash in the last 8-plus years. Mm-hmm. And obviously we've got a renovation or address the needs at Beaver Stadium coming up. And then certainly aquatics and tennis and soccer and you name it. We've done a lot of good things from a facility. We've started to get some momentum from a facility standpoint, but a lot of work to do.
Obviously, in the middle of this master plan, there's a pandemic. All right, so that's going to obviously, you know, knock a lot of things temporarily to the side as you've been able to keep the economic engine going during a pandemic, and now obviously it's getting back on track. But when it comes to Beaver Stadium, how important at least has been the groundwork with Populous Men to allow whomever has to make this decision down the line to at least know what options that they do have based on the groundwork that's already been done?
Yeah, well, Steve, that's exactly it. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot we could do during that time, so it did give us the opportunity to lay the groundwork, make sure that we'd done all the proper studies to know what it was that was going to be important to our fan base, what they were looking for, what's important to them, and then how we might address those things, and then what that might cost. As a matter of fact, I just ran into Scott Radisek from Populous in the hallway. He told me to tell you hello.
Oh, good.
great.
It's always Scott's the best.
Yeah, and so, you know, we're not quite finished yet, but we're getting to the end of that work that will enable us as Dr. Bindapudi, as she takes over as president, to really, they'll have the information they need to start making some decisions about how to address the needs and the gaps.
Obviously, being a Big Ten program means there will be Big Ten television dollars, and the contract is being negotiated now. I talked earlier about what John Oran reported about Fox, but that's his reporting from Sports Business Journal. it sounds like they're on some sort of track here to get this done sooner rather than later. What does it mean for the financial well-being of athletic departments in the Big Ten to have that number established as early as it's going to be established?
Well, you know, we all operate on forecast. You know, some of us use 5 years, some of us use 10 years, mm-hmm. And obviously, the further out a plan goes, the less reliable it is. But it's also smart to continually be doing the forecasting. So, I mean, that's the beauty of television. Whether it's television revenue, I should say, you know, whether it's a 6-year deal or it's a 9-year deal or it's a 12-year deal, or it's a 4, whatever it is,
right.
You know, you can lock it in. It used to be that at this level with schools, Big Ten schools that have the kinds of fan bases that we do, the size of a Beaver Stadium, that ticket revenue was our number one source of revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's television now.
Yep.
And all of the revenue is important, and you bet our football ticket revenue, our basketball ticket revenue, our wrestling ticket revenue, our hockey ticket revenue is all very important to us. But when you look at our chart of accounts and you look at where we are from a revenue standpoint, it's our television revenue that's at the top of that list.
No question. And the SEC and the Big Ten are in good stead with that coming up, because the SEC set, the Big Ten's about to be set.
Yes, and the Big Ten and the SEC we're very fortunate, Steve, to be members of the Big Ten. I am where I am in my career now, I think about starting my career in the Big Ten at Northwestern. And getting to finish my career here at Penn State. You know, the SEC and the Big Ten have really set themselves apart from a television revenue
yes.
standpoint, and then everything that means, you know, what that means we're able to do for our programs, for our student athletes. You know, frankly, the Big Ten set the record in the last one, and the SEC got a new deal and set the record, and we're going to set it again.
Yeah. All right. So from a point you took a job like this, and I don't mean just Penn State, but being an athletic director, what's the same about the job now compared to the first time you were being an athletic director? And what has really changed about the job?
you may not like my answer here. so what is the same is students.
Yeah.
That our why, our purpose, and our focus needs to be on students, their well-being, their experience, and providing them with every resource that we possibly can for them to be successful. So what is the same is students.
Yeah.
What is different is students.
Yeah, yeah. Right. I know exactly. I know where you're going here. So
that's... Yeah, yeah. They're different. Their needs are different. Their desires are different. And I'm not just talking about Penn State. Again, you said it. It's this is what my athletic director peers and I talk about. You know, all the time. And you know, this is why we've ended up with NIL. It's why we are where we are with transfers. I do not blame this whole thing on the transfer portal. I don't think the portal is the problem. Portal doesn't help, but it's just a vehicle. The issue is the free agency.
Mm-hmm.
And lest we not forget, you know, that when I was coaching in the dark ages, in the early 80s, everybody had to serve a year in residence, whether you played field hockey or you played football.
Right.
And then somewhere along the way,
yep.
the powers that be decided that field hockey and tennis and golf and swimming shouldn't have to sit out, but that basketball and football and men's hockey and baseball did have to sit out. And then we got to 2020, and that was indefensible.
Yeah.
And I think we can all understand that. And you know, the NIL piece, book. You and I have talked about this.
Yes.
I am 100% supportive of our student athletes having the opportunity to monetize their name, image, and likeness like any other student on this campus.
Right.
What I don't like is how it's been weaponized in recruiting.
Yeah. Yes. I think that's well said. I'll wrap with this. We will celebrate 50 years of Title IX in June. What kind of progress, in your opinion, has been made in 50 years? And then what needs to happen, in your opinion, the next 50 to really make it worthwhile for everybody across the board in terms of not just awareness but opportunity?
Yeah. So, I owe my career to Title IX. I owe my career to my dad and his sharing of his passion for sport with me.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't have the opportunity to be the AD at Tulane or University of California, Berkeley or Penn State without Title IX. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, I think back to the opportunities that I had as a student athlete at Wake Forest in the late 70s and early 80s. And I look at, you know, I look at our student athletes, our female student athletes here today, and it's light years. It's light years different. And I'm so excited for them and grateful to have been a part of that. And yet, I know we're not there yet.
Right.
I do happen to think that our biggest gap is between our revenue sports and our non-revenue sports, regardless of gender.
Mm-hmm.
But we still have some gender gaps for sure. And I think two things have to happen. Secondary education and higher ed college campuses need to get serious about treating all students equitably,
mm-hmm.
all programs equitably. Because
yeah.
I don't think this is like NCAA enforcement. You know, they're just OCR doesn't have enough. They can't be everywhere.
Right.
You know, so I don't think we can. I don't think we can holistically count on enforcement, although I do think enforcement needs to get better. But I think there needs to be a call on college presidents to be looking specifically at college athletics. But again, this is about secondary. This is at every level, right? And to be serious. About equity.
Always a pleasure. Thank you so much. Appreciate the time, as always.
Always great to be with you, Steve. Love it. I'll come back every time you invite me, and always enjoy being together.
Same here. Thank you, Sandy.
All right, Steve. Take care.